is up, y'all? Welcome to The Stack. I am Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of comics that have come out this very day. Not all of them. That was a lie. Not all of them have come out today. DC Comics come out yesterday. But that's fine. We're all good here. We just like talking about comics. Comics is comics. Let's talk about a big anniversary issue, Justice League number 50 from DC Comics, written by Cy Spurrier and pencils by Aaron Lepestri. Now, in this book, the Justice League has not taken over an alien planet, but is basically helping run an alien planet. They've become embroiled in a big old war and find out, of course, not everything is what they think. What did you think about this issue? And also, how did you think about it as an anniversary issue for the Justice League?
Well, it's an interesting issue because it really gets into the emotional relationships between the characters in a way that I didn't really see coming for a big anniversary issue. Right?
I felt like, by the way, we should mention
Pete is in an echo chamber today where he can't get close enough to his microphone. So go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I'm working on that old school echo sound effect, you know, just really having fun with
that. Just lean into your mic, buddy. You can do it.
So I feel like, I'm sorry, man, my back is fucking killing me, so I can't bend over for another hour.
I'm being rough on you. I apologize. This is classic. This is like Batman razzing Wonder Woman in this issue of Justice League.
Good stuff. Exactly.
I just felt like it was, to me, a classic Justice League because it was, you know, everybody learned everything. It had like that kind of like, not fighting's not the answer. You got to talk it out. Like, I felt like it was like a nice kind of like the more you know kind of moment Justice League thing.
A PSA.
I mean, to the point you were making, Justin, I was surprised about this issue, particularly after the enormous moves that Scott Snyder and company were making on the Justice League run for most of, I don't know how many issues it was, but certainly for most of this run. Cy Spurrier, always good. Alvin Lepestri, very good at sort of old school art. I particularly like Batman's cape, which was almost like veiny in a way, which was interesting. But
I wanted more out of this.
I wanted a mission statement about the Justice League, and that's not necessarily what I got.
Yeah, and I don't know. So Cy Spurrier just, I feel like, doesn't write that way. He's someone who's going to bring in sort of like weirder takes and get into sort of internality of the characters. And I think that's what you get here, which is in stark contrast to all of Scott Snyder's stuff.
And it's good. It's a good issue of Justice League. I just don't think it's a Justice League number 50. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, that's shots, dude. Shots fired.
No, I don't think it's shots fired.
I think shots fired.
What number feels better for this? Are you talking like 27?
47? Yeah.
4?
Yeah. Honestly, if it was Justice League 27, I'd be like, this is a good issue. As Justice League 50, I want a celebration of what makes the Justice League the Justice League. And to your point, you don't get Cy Spurrier to do that. You get Cy Spurrier to be like, what's my weird sci-fi idea? And then ground some characters for that, which he does very well here.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's talk about another grounded space epic, Empire number 4 from Marvel Comics. Story by Al Ewing and Dan Slott. Script by Al Ewing. Art by Valerio Schiti. And I'll tell you a Schiti thing that happens in this issue.
Oh, come on,
spoiler.
Man.
Alex,
come on, don't
do
that. That
prepared the script for this Stack podcast.
I've been preparing for this my whole life, buddy.
I guess I would give this comic a Cy Spurrier, the writer of it, and move on to...
This is going to make you say Ewing.
Oh, come on.
And slot in another opinion. I don't know. That didn't really work. Listen, I had this great transition, and you guys fucked it up for
me. Well, because you're shitting on someone's actual name.
You're being really Schiti about this person's name.
I didn't do that. You did do it.
You did it, Pete.
No, you did it. You did that.
You did that.
So, Kree-Skrull War, turns out to actually be a war with the Kotati, who are some plant people who are trying to take over Earth. We've seen that fall out all over Earth. They're attacking Wakanda. They're fighting Captain America. They're doing all these things. Meanwhile, in space, Hulkling and his army, Hulkling is trying to keep the peace, but as of this issue, spoiler, he's not. Something seems to be wrong with him. And I'm just going to straight up spoil the two big things I think that happened this issue, because I think they're worth talking about. So if you don't want spoilers, turn away. First one, we know that She-Hulk got a power-up back in the first issue. She got a what seemed like an accuser's hammer. She got control of her mind. Turns out, according to the Kotati, she's dead. They killed her and infected her with a plant. And she mentions that as she's going toe-to-toe with the Thing. That is very upsetting.
I agree. What an inauspicious death for a great character that's gotten a lot of, like, maybe not great treatment over the years, but certainly, like, some great stories from Dan Slott.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, though, that because it was off-panel and such a side comment, that it's not holding water. It's just a villain saying some shit to try to get somebody off their game.
I think that's possible. I could certainly see a swerve like that there. But the fact that they have the villain repeat, nope, she's dead. Yes. She dead, basically, is pretty in your face about it. And if it is true, if that is how they kill off She-Hulk, real bummer. I do not like that at all.
Agreed. Didn't like to have She-Hulk be the one that goes down again without any real fanfare.
If anybody's going to kill She-Hulk, I feel like Dan Slott can if he wants to. I really hope that's not what happens, and I really hope that, like, it's not some off-panel thing that a villain says and that's all we get. But, you know, he did do a lot of great She-Hulk stuff, so, you know, it is his choice, and he does like to drink the tears of his readers, so...
Hmm. I thought you were going to say, if there's anyone that's going to take out She-Hulk, it's a random moon plant. Her greatest nemesis.
Well, moon plants
for so long,
are tough,
for so
man.
Long, she's hated plants. The second big thing, though, on the opposite of the spectrum, great thing that I hope they blow the lid off of on Marvel, because this is such a big, awesome deal. So Hulkling's acting weird. Captain Marvel and Johnny Storm get sent back to Earth. They get sent to Wiccan's apartment, or whatever he's called now. And Wiccan says, nah, that's not Teddy. That definitely is not Teddy. Look at him. His face isn't doing that. That's not what he does. That's not how he's acting. I don't care if you scanned him and found out that was definitely Teddy. They're fooling your instruments. And I know, because that's not the man that I married. And the last page is the reveal that they already got married with the Young Avengers all there. Awesome.
Yeah. That was great. And what
boom shakalaka.
To save that for the last page reveal, I thought was really cool too, because, you know, that's in big events like this, that's where you expect the sort of big takeaway from the issue, and the fact that they chose to make it that, I thought was great.
Plus, like, what a great plug for Wilbur's walk-in weddings. I mean, Wilbur is, I mean, that's some prime advertising right there.
You thinking about checking that one out, Pete?
Oh, yeah, man. Just going to walk in one, bro. Wilbur, you were right.
That's nice.
I will tell you.
You're thinking about getting married, Pete.
No, not until I saw this amazing ad.
I will tell you, if I've been a little, even though I've enjoyed reading these issues, I think I've been a little cold on this crossover. If it turns out that Empire is just all an epic love story between Hulkling and Wiccan, great. 100% on board. They're one of the best relationships in the Marvel Universe. So doubling down on that, I think, is phenomenal. And I hope that's the direction this is going in. Next up, to continue the Empire beat, we got Lords of Empire Celestial Messiah number one from Marvel, written by Alex Paknadal and art by Alex Linz. Other than the fact that it's very weird that there's this many Alexes on this book, speaking as an Alex.
Only you could say that. Only you could go after the Alex.
Otherwise, it's anti-Alex-Semitic. This is another one of these one-shots focusing on one of the big characters of Empire. We, I think, really loved the last one, the Lords of Empire, Emperor Hulkling. How'd you feel about this one?
I liked it. I thought reading this really connected to me how much Empire feels like it's drawing from Alan Moore Swamp Thing as like sort of that mythical underpinning and plant biological, a little bit of like body dysmorphia stuff coming through here. So that was cool. Also, you know, you got to fight your mom someday. That's something we all know. Oh, got to fight your mom.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, man. I'm not looking forward to that. Yeah, some cool art, some fun flashback stuff, some weird flashback stuff. All right.
I like the flashbacks a little better than the present stuff. I was looking forward to this just because I was so pleasantly surprised, by the Emperor Hulkling book. I would have loved for this to just stay in the past, focus on a swordsman and Mantis's relationship leading up to the Celestial Messiah in the present versus the present stuff, which well drawn, but the past stuff felt much more special and poignant to me.
The kid stuff was fucking with me too much, man. That one kid, it was super mean. He was like, there's only one Captain America. I was like, are you fucking kidding me, kid? What the fuck?
Yeah, you got to read Truth.
Yeah.
Right? Find out about the original Captain America. You jerk little kid. All right, let's move on to Ice Cream Man number 20 from Image Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Morazzo. I'll also mention we have W. Maxwell Prince is going to be a guest on our live show next week, which I'm very excited slash nervous about.
I'm nervous because we
love this book so much.
What if he infects us? What if he infects us with some brain worms?
Oh, my God. I'm fucking scared.
Legitimately scared. Like, he's probably going to be like, hey, guys, I'm a normal guy. What's going on? Let's talk about Ice Cream. But there's
a fucked up smile that just gets bigger and bigger as we interview him.
So this issue, like most issues of Ice Cream Man, is a very focused story. In this one, the Ice Cream Man himself has taken up residence with the family, is reading stories to the kids, and they're all messed up versions of classic stories from Dr. Seuss, from Sam I Am, Green Eggs and Ham, to The Giving Tree.
Goodnight Moon.
Goodnight Moon. Man, just...
This was too much, man. This was fucked with my childhood in a way I wasn't ready for, man.
Yeah.
This is a great issue. I think after the poignancy of the past couple of issues, this is diminishing it by saying this a little bit, but it's a little bit more of a lark, but he even says that at the beginning that I think he says it's a comedy in three parts.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it is. It's just these funny, insanely dark parodies of these books with the wraparound, but still a particularly great issue of the book.
This for me, like, really hurt. Like, when they did the mockery of the Giving Tree and then set the tree on fire, I had to walk away. I was like, you fucking asshole. That was like one of, you know, when I was a kid, like, that story was really touching. And, like, it was like he set my childhood on fire. That one hurt, man.
It is fucked up. And we should say that Pete is the son of a human father and a plant, a tree. So it really makes sense. And also why Empire is such a struggle for you.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. Like, to your point, Alex, like, going down and having the sort of the more, a little more arch, a little more poignant stuff of the previous issues, and then getting into this, which is fun. There's humor here, despite the fact that it's like pitch black and terrifying, is what is so great about this book.
Also, like, each book is so twisted and unique. There is a fear when you start to read one of these issues where it's like, oh, God, is this going to be really fucked up? Like, oh, God, is this going to live up to the hype? Because it's been so well done each issue. Part of me is like, oh, God, I don't want them to lose this kind of, like, amazing web that they've woven. And it's really, really well done.
Yeah, great issue. Definitely pick up this book. Let's move on to another one. Backtrack number 5 from Oni Press, written and created by Brian Joins, illustrated by Jake Elphick. I think we've sung the praises of this book for the past couple of issues. This is basically a death race set throughout time is the pitch here. This is picking up on the last issue where they're trapped in Berlin before the wall has fallen. On the wrong side of the wall, they've all been captured, and they've got to escape and get to their checkpoint. This is another great issue of this book. I know I say the same thing each time, but such a clear pitch. The stakes are so high. They ramp up exponentially what's going on in terms of the danger by the end of this issue. It's just so smartly written across the board.
Yeah, I agree. It feels so different from other books, and such a strong premise. This issue felt a little bit, to me, bogged down when the other earlier issues felt like super fun sort of throughout. This was like a little more like running around through different rooms. But I just love the way this book is constantly driving forward. Like the cars.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of like it's not Fast and Furious in time because there's other stuff going on and different characters. But like
versus Fast and Furious, which is very focused.
Well, the pace of this is great.
And technically, Fast and Furious, they're traveling through time because they're moving slowly forward like most humans.
Okay.
Just a little bit faster.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but Dominic Toretto lives his life a quarter mile at a time, Pete.
Wow, I like the way you did the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. So there's nothing better than, you know, killing Nazis and running through time. So, like... Yeah, sure. Let's have some fun. I'm excited.
I mean, they're not Nazis, but all right.
Yeah, they're kind of Nazis.
You say this a lot on the podcast, and just because they're Germans back in time does not intrinsically make them Nazis.
Okay.
There's a lot of different time periods in Germany and a lot of different things going on.
If you show me Germany back in the day, you know what I'm going to think about? So that's... Wow.
Are the Neanderthals that settled in the France-German area considered Nazis as well?
Yes, they are. Yes, wow. They are. So anyways, yeah, this is fun. The art's great. It's a great pace to this comic.
Next up, Deceased, Dead Planet number 2 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor and pencils by Trevor Harrison. This is taking place in a world taken over by the anti-life equation. Last issue, we focused on a new generation of heroes who had escaped. They come back. They find out, thanks to Cyborg's severed head, that there is potentially a cure for everything that's going on. This issue, we kind of pick up on that, but mostly we focus on the Shadow Pact, who ends up in a horrible, horrible situation. I am consistently impressed how... Through both Injustice and this franchise, Tom Taylor could just make messed up situation after messed up situation. His imagination is phenomenally impressive.
It's really crazy because I was like so blindsided. I should have seen it coming a mile away. I was like, yeah, fucking Shadow Pack. This is great. And then I'm like, oh no, Shadow Pack. Why? Nah. But I love the art's amazing. I loved seeing Swamp Thing lose his shit. You know, I guess Harley Quinn's going to be in every comic now. I'm fine with it. It's fine.
I mean, I would argue that part of it, beyond Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, is what Tom Taylor has done with Harley Quinn through his Injustice comics, is he's really embraced her and written her in a fantastic way. He's clearly a favorite of hers. That's why he works her in. But a lot of it can be chalked up to his writing.
Yeah, I ain't mad at it, but, you know, it's definitely happening right now.
Writing is happening. I love just the specificity of all of these books and Tom Taylor's work in general. I think that is what it's like, comes in hard on a story, tells it like with impactful beats throughout, and then moves on. And I think that's what's so good about these books. And it really feels like a fresh take on the sort of superhero zombie genre.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Giant Size X-Men Phantom X number 1 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman and art by Ivan Rice. I think there was a Rice, but I couldn't find the first name. So one of our criticisms of these Giant Size books is they don't seem to focus on the people of their title. You know, that it's like Giant Size X-Men Nightcrawler.
It's Rod Rice.
Rod Rice, thank you. But it's about, that makes a lot more sense than Ivan Rice because it didn't look like his art. you know, they'll have like giant size X-Men Nightcrawler, but it's focusing on Glob Herman or whatever. But this one is very squarely on Phantom X and his history, which is very convoluted, very complicated. This, surprisingly to me, distills everything that's going down with him in a very simple way and follows him through the decades as he consistently tries to infiltrate the world, the place that made him. What'd you guys think about this book?
So, also, Rod Bryce is on the writing part of it as well. He's doing the stories, not just the art. Yeah, this is just kind of like Phantom X Groundhog Day type of situation where every 10 years, instead of reliving the same day. So, yeah, I was glad by the end of it. He's like, okay, for the last time. I'm like, is it Phantom? It would be cool if it was. But,
oh, you call him Phantom for short?
Yeah, Fanties.
Fanties.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. You know, it kind of... We didn't really get anywhere, but all right. I'm excited to see maybe something happens moving forward, but cool.
I mean, I've said this, like you were saying, Alex, about a lot of these issues. It feels like it's just sort of a free writing series of books for Jonathan Hickman, where he can just sort of cut loose and tell sort of a bit of a wandery story. This one is definitely going in a direction, but it doesn't leave us with any like, oh, I see now. Yeah, there was right. one scene, though, I think really stands out. It's in the middle of the book. Phantom X is sitting with Wolverine and Scott Summers.
Yeah.
And Scott Summers passes out from being too drunk. And right. Wolverine says, and if I may quote, "This guy's one of the best," talking about Scott Summers. "Trust me, Phantom X, it's like I promised. There's nobody I'd rather have in my corner than Scott Summers."
Yeah. But it's also they're all drinking, so he could be being very sarcastic because they're walking away and leaving Scott Summers lying on the ground. So
the next page, though, he says, "Just to be clear, now that I'm sober, I was not drunk when I said those things about Scott Summers."
No, that didn't happen.
Then the Punisher came out and said, "So, Pete, I want to be very clear. Scott Summers is the best of us."
I want to be super clear about something. The art in this book is phenomenal.
Is it worth picking up for the art alone, Pete?
I don't know if anyone's ever said that before, but that's a nice thing to say about something. Wow.
They actually say that all the time at my day job.
Oh, wow. Cool.
You
this is very
son
cool.
of a bitch.
I'm a classically trained actor.
What drunk. Else?
We're fucking shill parrots is what we are. We'll say whatever the people tell us to say. Undiscovered Country number 7 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Camicoli and Leonardo Marcello Grossi. This is kicking off the second arc of this book. The first arc found a bunch of people infiltrating the Forbidden Zone that was the United States, finding out the time had sped up there, so that horrible monsters and a weird creature called the Dusty Man were controlling the outer rim of the United States. They've managed to work their way into the second rim, and that's where we pick up here, where we get to the second circle of the United States. It's very different from the first one. There is, I would say, a great twist at the end. This book is just very, very good. I don't know what's going on most of the time.
Finally,
but I
some
love
clarity.
It anyway.
They give us some backstory that is also weird and crazy, and we still don't know what it means. but it is like the story elements are there, where they're like we get twists and turns. It's just we don't know much about the context or what if in any direction we're headed in.
Yeah, it's really impressive how little we know, but I feel like we get a lot in this issue, which is nice. But yeah, we still don't have the answers we need, but this is really fun. The art's phenomenal, kind of really great last page. And, you know, we get like little moments in this, which is nice because like before it's just been, I feel like, we haven't really known the characters enough to kind of sit with them, but this kind of feels like it's catching up to itself and like, paying off the smaller beats well, which is great.
I think that's a fair point, Pete, that it definitely we've gotten backstories for each of the main characters who came into America at this point, so we know them. We get a different character's backstory in this issue, so that's fleshed out for a very specific purpose by the end. But to the point Justin was making, it's almost like, what if Lost was all polar bears and smoke monsters, and those were all the characters?
That's a great call.
Yeah, where it's fascinating, and I can't stop reading it, but I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
Here's another one that's a little more straightforward. Transformers My Little Pony Friendship in Disguise, yeah! Number one from IDW, written by our friend James Asmus and Ian Flynn, art by Tony Flex and Jack Lawrence. This is, as you can guess from the title, mashing up My Little Pony and Transformers. It's two stories. The first one brings them together in the universe by James Asmus. The second one, Ian Flynn, has one of the Transformers team up with one of the My Little Ponies. Pete, you seem pretty jazzed about this, which I'm surprised about.
Yeah, at first I was like, these don't belong together. What the fuck are you doing? How does this exist? But even when it opens, the My Little Pony is kind of making fun of it. And I think it does a good job of, like, how are we going to do this? And it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's ridiculous. But you've got to be like, all right, this is going to be insane going in. And, yeah, it's kind of fun to see a fucked up, dark My Little Pony team up with Megatron.
Yeah.
Justin, what did you think about this one?
I mean, it's a fun mashup. When you take two disparate things and put them together, it's what you are getting from the title alone. Friendship in Disguise is just a great title, and that is literally what happens.
Yeah,
and I was surprised how, and I probably shouldn't have been, but I was surprised how hilarious James Asmus's story was.
Yes.
Like, it leans into the comedy. It's basically him writing bits the entire time, and they're very funny bits. The second story is a little more straightforward in terms of, okay, this is what it's like if Transformers and My Little Pony teamed up. But the first one I liked quite a lot. There's a great bit with Grimlock that happens halfway through. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this. I thought that was a fun issue.
It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was a lot more surprising. I just didn't think it could be this good. But it's also like, as a kid, you know, when I would go visit friends or whatever, it would be like I would bring my Transformers and they would have My Little Pony. So it was kind of like my childhood came to life a little bit.
I want to see the My Little Pony cut of the Transformers films.
There you go. Next up,
release
Strange
the
Adventures.
Pony cut.
Strange Adventures number 4 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, interior and cover art by Mitch Gerards and Evan Doc Shader. So it seems like every other issue of this book, the odd issues are going to focus on Adam Strange or Alana Strange, and then the even issues are going to focus on Mr. Terrific, I guess.
Yes.
Because this one, we see Mr. Terrific head to Ron to investigate what's been going on with Adam Strange. He, of course, runs into resistance. The flashback storyline is we see Adam Strange trying to get back to Ron in the middle of the war that he said he'd fight. Just another phenomenal issue of this book.
Yeah. The way it's being laid out, what Tom King is doing by just sort of making us see Adam Strange as this, like, sort of disingenuous, like, what is this guy up to presence in the story, and then having that be what sort of the end point that we're going to arrive at. Like, is he lying? What's his deal? I think it's just so fun. And having someone like Mr. Terrific on the other side of that, whose whole thing is being fair and seeking justice, is just a great two sides of the coin playing against each other.
I mean, the only thing that I learned for sure with this issue is that it's going to 12. On the cover, it said number 4 of 12, and I was like, oh, okay, that's good to know. It's nice to have some facts as I move forward.
I appreciate the fact that you read the cover, Pete. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea what's happening in this at all. I don't know what's happening with the evens or the odds or any of that kind of shit, but I do enjoy it. It's very enjoyable.
Ooh.
And, you know, don't point guns at Mr. Terrific, okay? Don't try to shoot Mr. Terrific, all right? Thank you.
I am in love with the fact that this is not just a great Adam Strange book, but a great Mr. Terrific book, which is such a underused character. in the DC universe to spoil a couple of moments that, like, one moment actually that made me say, oh shit, out loud. So Mr. Terrific is investigating what's going on. He's been giving diplomatic help by Ron. He's investigating the mystery. They say, absolutely, you can investigate anything in our archives. Just look into them. Oh, the Pict stuff, the bad guy stuff, we haven't been able to translate it. So he goes, he does that. He goes back and says, hey, I want to read the Pict stuff. And the librarian says, oh, nobody can read that. We haven't been able to translate it. He says, well, I actually learned Pict on the way over here, so if you could just give it to me. And there's a predictable amount of back and forth where he's just like, give me this stuff. Eventually, Sarnath, who is this classic DC Comics character, who you know is just the tightest of the tight asses in the DC universe, comes up and says, no, you absolutely can't do this. You've overstepped your bounds. And he hits him. And Mr. Terrific, I think, backhands him.
Yeah, backhands him.
Which, like, I legitimately said, oh, shit, out loud when I read that. Which
but
I never
also loved what fair he play, said after. Dude. Yeah, he goes,
and then he says, what do you think fair play means? Which is an amazing line. Like, absolutely fantastic. Like, just, I didn't expect that out of this book, given how tense and emotional it's been the past couple of issues, and not to spend too much time on this, but man, the fact that every issue of this book has gotten an emotional reaction out of me personally, that is a testament to how good it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Next one, Doctor Strange, Surgeon Supreme, number 6 from Marvel Comics, Mark Waid and Kev Walker, Storytellers. This is the last issue of this book, which, as you could probably tell from the title, has taken the bet that Doctor Strange is not only a Sorcerer Supreme, he's also a surgeon, and he can do that again because his hands are kind of fixed. This one, he's going up against Madame Mask. There's with Dr. Druid. There's some fun stuff throughout. How'd you feel about this issue?
I like this a lot. I was sad to see in the back that it's the last issue of the series. I love Mark Waid's stories. There's no one better writing like just a great single issue of a comic. No matter what part of an arc it's on, he just like crushes it. And this was great. We get to, in the head of Madame Mask, find out she's truly in love with Iron Man. Very fun stuff. Sad that it's over.
Yeah, the art's unbelievable. It's really cool. Yeah, I mean, it was just a little weird where it was like, you know, I'll give you a new mask. And she's like, how dare you? And jumps out a window. But, you know, all right.
It would restore her sanity, that mask. She'd rather be crazy in love than sane and I guess just regular.
Didn't, this is not apropos of this discussion at all, but Kev Walker, didn't he do Thunderbolts, I think? Because this, having Madame Mask there and his art on that gave me pleasant vibes of that a little bit. It's just a good story. I wish it was ongoing. I understand you can't necessarily maintain a Doctor Strange book long form, but good stuff, and I think everybody should check it out. Sex Criminals, number 30 from Image Comics by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. This is the second to last issue of the book. There's a great joke about this in the back matter where Matt Fraction says, wow, the last issue of Sex Criminals. I can't believe I'm writing that, mainly because this is not the last issue of Sex Criminals. Very funny. But this is wrapping up the present
storyline.
It seems
like it's the last issue.
Well, he says this is wrapping up the storyline, and then next issue is essentially a postscript to the series where they follow up, I think, 3 years and 3 months later with all of the characters. But we get a wrap-up of our main characters and the main emotional relationship. How'd you feel about this? How'd you feel almost treating this as the last issue? How'd you feel it wrapped up here?
I feel like they should meet up 3 years and 1 month because it'll be issue 31, but all right.
Well, getting into the numbers, I love this issue. I've found this series like fun and interesting, but a little inconsistent sort of with what it was. Like, it was often like very funny and often like sort of intense. But this really nailed it, I think, tonally, where it really brought all the themes home. You really feel you're right there alongside the characters, and just really good. Really, I think my favorite issue of the series is this one.
Yeah, I mean, the art and the storytelling is just really phenomenal. It's amazing panel work and really just like the different lighting and shading with how it's telling the story. It's really just, I can't say enough about the art and the storytelling. It's really impressive.
It's good stuff. This is a great book. Don't pick it up with this issue because it's the second to last one. Next up, Batman number 96 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV and art by Jorge Jimenez. This is continuing the Joker War storyline. The Joker has basically taken over Gotham by this point. Batman is losing his mind. What'd you think?
This is so intense in such a crazy great way of like, and the cover really says it all, where it's like Batman on the outside of his own plane and Joker's running shit. I mean, Batman basically wakes up to the Joker being in charge of Gotham, and it's his kind of his worst nightmare. And, you know, it's funny because we've got Harley Quinn here being the voice of reason, which is a fun change. And like, you know, Batman is like talking to himself, and there's like this funny moment where he's like, "You're not real, but I'll deal with that later." It's just so intense. It's a really smart idea of like, okay, you know, Joker's like, "You have all the best toys. What if we gave Joker all of Batman's resources? What the fuck would he do?" And that's such a fun idea. And it's kind of fun to see this play out and to see what's going to happen. Batman is such a huge book to write, and I feel like James is really killing it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Harley, this is a great Harley issue, I thought. And the choice to give Joker money is just so smart, and I love seeing it play out.
Also, yeah. We got like... We had Punchline introduced, you know, but then we get this kind of crazy punk kid who's got a bat with a batarang. So it's like a bat batarang.
Love that. That's basically Casey Jones in the Batman universe.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be interested to see what happens with that.
This is a great book. Next one up, Fantastic Four, number 2 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Paco Medina and Sean Zasquez. This is tying into Empire. It's focusing on Valerie and Franklin, who are on Earth. They are on Yancey Street, of course. They've called in Wolverine and Spider-Man and almost made the entire lineup of the new Fantastic Four, which is what Dan Slott's riffing off of here. It was just a lot of fun. I enjoyed this book, and I think this is like Dan Slott in his sweet spot, which is Marvel continuity and playing with it and playing with the characters he loves.
Yeah, I love the new Fantastic Four sort of being a piece here with Spider-Man, Wolverine, Hulk, and Ghost Rider. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, that I love that team up. That was really fun back in the day. This was a fun book. Dan Slott just having some fun. And it's cool because, like, as someone who's read a ton of this shit, it's fun to be like, oh, wait.
Sorry, when you say a ton of the shit, do you mean comic books?
Yeah. specifically Ghost Rider and Hulk comic books. Like, when the characters are talking and you're kind of like, that's not their voices. And then it kind of turns out you're kind of right and they know that. And they were kind of, like, leaning into that the whole time. It's just, this is such... well-written, well-set-up, really cool stuff. And it's fun to see kind of Dan Slott doing this kind of stuff. This is a sweet spot to me.
I agree. Like I said, sweet spot. Justin, do you agree? Sweet spot?
Sweet spot, sweet slot.
Next up, The Goddamn, The Virgin Brides, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Jason Aaron and art by R.M. Guerra. This is continuing a new story in the world of The Goddamn, which is a messed up Bible set storyline. Here we get a couple of virgins who are being held by old women. They are, as they found out the last issue, forced to mate with angels to create horrific angel babies. One of them finally got her womanly time and is decided to flee. In this issue, the two of them flee. They are trying to get away. This book is so intense to read.
Yes, it is. It's like Thelma and Louise, just from running from horrifying angels, basically, rather than just a society that doesn't have a place for them.
Now, Pete, you were not a big fan of the first issue. How'd you feel about the second one?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a lot of, it's dark, it's twisted, there's a lot of weird nudity. I don't know, man. I'm excited to see where this goes, because right now I'm a little uncomfortable.
Right. There you go.
Great. It's very dark. It's very violent. It's very sexual.
But I like where it ends.
A classic Pete cocktail.
Yeah, but I like where it ends. It gives you a little hope that it's not going to stay in this dark, fucked up, you know, place.
Definitely is. All right, next up, Far Sector number 7 from DC Comics, written by N.K. Jemisin and art by Jamal Campbell. This has been one of our favorite books on the podcast, a different sort of riff on Green Lantern. Here she is going up against some tech villains, finds out things are not exactly what she thinks they are, but also we get further hints that things are not what we think they are in terms of her Green Lantern ring this issue. Once again, such a well-structured, intriguing Green Lantern book. And like both of you guys have been saying, the best Green Lantern book on the stands.
It's by far my favorite thing that's in the Green Lantern world. I can't recommend this comic enough. This is so badass, so creative. The art is unbelievable. The pace of it is just glorious. It looks kind of like a Voltron anime style. It's just so, so fantastic. The coloring, it's such a, you gotta pick up this book.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Pete, and what really stood out this issue is just the cleanliness of the art. Like, it's so clean. It builds a world with just the science fiction world that feels like it stands alone. So good.
And last one we're going to talk about, this is from one of our guests on our previous week's live podcast. Rick and Morty presents Bird Person number 1 from Oni Press, written by Alex Fire and illustrated by Fred C. Stressing. If you haven't listened to live podcast with Alex, definitely check it out. But let's see what's going on. We told him we liked it on the live podcast. Did we like it?
Wow. I did. I think this.
Me too.
This is right in line with what we talked about when we were talking to Alex about these Rick and Morty comics. They are really fun. Really a lot of interesting twists and turns. It feels like just editorially, there's such a strong vision for this series, even though they're standalone issues. Like, it fleshes out the past while having a lot of fun and having some, like, real character moves by the end of it. I thought this was really good.
You can't just put kids in pits with sharp objects on their heads, all right, guys? That's not going to hold up. That's not going to work.
I don't know, man. That's how I want to raise my kids.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Good luck. Pit kids, kids raised in pits do not do well in life. Just a
heads
up.
We used to do a show live from the pit, and that's where I hope to someday bring my children.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah, I mean, this does feel very much like the show. Yeah, it's fun. It's, you know, it's what's cool is it's really kind of a deep dive into this bird person's world, and it's enjoyable.
All right, that is it for our Stack Podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out, ask us questions about comic books. Pete's mic just completely fell apart just now. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. We'll see you next time at the Virtual Comic Book Shop.
One friendship that isn't in disguise is ours.
Aww.